Okay, here we go. Hi, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez. It's Direct Impact, and this is what we're going to be talking about.
Joe Biden's legacy of accomplishment over the past 3 years is unmatched in modern history. In one term, he has already, yes, you may clap.
Unmatched in modern history? And maybe there's a reason there was no one clapping. And it's really kind of nothing to laugh at. This is Direct Impact, and I am Rick Sanchez, and let's do this. Here we go. We said it, and it happened. So the President of the United States will not be running for re-election after all. Now, pardon me for just a minute, for taking a bow here for our team. But back in March, that was about 4.5 months ago, March 7th to be exact, there was one network that came out and detailed that this very thing was going to happen. And it wasn't Fox, and it wasn't the BBC, and it wasn't CNN or NBC. It was this network. It was this show. It was RT. We posted that special back then, March 7th, and then we watched as the Western media ignored the obvious even until the very end, when it became so obvious to everybody that continuing for another 4 years would be impossible for Mr. Biden. The only thing that we didn't get right was the kind of bizarre way in which Mr. Biden dropped out. Now, for comparison's sake, I want to show you something. I want to show you something that was iconic in our lifetime. Those of us who are old enough to remember, right? Like the Vietnam years and stuff. Here is LBJ in 1968 dropping out. I was a little kid, of course, with words that have become somewhat immortalized.
I shall not seek, and I will not accept the nomination of my party for another term as your president.
Yep. So Biden just did the same thing. That was the last time something like this had happened, by the way. Biden instead announced it in a letter tweeted on X. And that set off a big issue, namely, who would replace him? What did the letter say? Not much, at least when it came to Kamala Harris. Look at this. Interestingly enough, he doesn't even mention her until like at the very end of the letter after rattling off all of his accomplishments. And then he adds, almost as if it's an afterthought, oh, and I want to thank Vice President Kamala Harris for being an extraordinary partner in all of this work. It sounds like he's saying that she kind of tagged along, right? Ouch. But then, right after the letter comes out, Kamala's people and others in the Democratic Party, obviously, they get on the horn with the president and the president's people, you know, the guys who write the letter, and they convince them to put out another tweet right away. So like 10, 15 minutes later, Mr. Biden endorses Kamala Harris, right? It was an obvious afterthought. But that sets off an anointing process, if you will, for which Democrats are famous, with Democrat after Democrat jumping on this Kamala Harris bandwagon. And here's the problem with what they're doing, okay? I'm going to show you a headline. Look at this headline. This headline is in an article in NBC, NBC News of all places, where Kamala Harris has never won a national election and has never been liked or approved of by voters. In fact, when she ran in 2020, here they are saying it's a mess, right? Her campaign was quoted here as being a mess. 2020 campaign was a mess, says the headline. The article goes on to say that she quit almost right away because she lacked the message, she lacked money, and she lacked a cohesive campaign operation. By the rules and regs of her own party, Harris has no right to claim the president's delegates at this convention, right? Because unless he dies or steps down as president, not as candidate, she's really just another candidate right now. I mean, those are the rules that many in the media are obviously overlooking. Of course, if it was Trump or Vance, they wouldn't be overlooking it. By the way, can she do better than Joe Biden? Yes. When it comes to African-American voters, she does better. Got to give her her due there. But can she beat Trump? No, not according to the latest polls. And in fact, here they are. Look at this, right? She's losing on the first one. She ties on the second. Just look down the line here, right? She loses to Trump. Finally, she beats Trump by one. Then she loses to Trump, and she loses to Trump. So really, she's not doing any better than President Biden's numbers were at the time. In fact, she may be doing a little bit worse with white Anglo-Saxon men, for what it's worth. Manila, what do you say?
Well, Rick, there have been these hypothetical polls for months and months and months, and they've more seriously been doing it the past few weeks since Biden suffered, you know, the campaign death blow that was the debate. Mm-hmm. Her numbers are just as unremarkable as her time as VP, dismal even, hovering in the mid-30s. She might be doing a smidge better than Biden among some of these smaller voting blocks, but the numbers remain generally flat and unchanged between her and Biden versus Trump. Now, back in the 2020 election cycle, she dropped out of that race following that thumping that she took from Tulsi Gabbard. She dropped out just a few weeks ahead of the California primary vote, where she was severely trailing behind Bernie, Liz Warren, even back then Mayor Pete Buttigieg. And this was her own home state. In that cycle, she never even drew polling numbers outside of the low single digits. So her dropping out of the primary before Californians actually went to the polls probably saved her some humiliation at home. And, you know, although she's not technically the new Democratic nominee, Rick, I think it would appear that she's the heir apparent, because Nancy Pelosi just came out and officially endorsed her right before we came to air.
Yeah, and that gets to the politics. And it's really kind of, I think, dirty politics at this point. Because while most Democrats are getting on board with the Kamala bandwagon, there are some who are still out, right? You mentioned Pelosi now is getting in. Schumer is still out. Hakeem Jeffries is still out. And Barack Obama, perhaps the most important voice of the Democratic Party, has still not endorsed Kamala Harris. In fact, here's what Obama put out over the weekend. He says, the former president wrote, "We will be navigating uncharted waters in the days ahead, but I have extraordinary confidence that the leaders of our party are going to be able to create a process from which an outstanding nominee emerges." Now, what do those people have in common? Those are some of the people who I just talked about who convinced Joe Biden to step down. Are they not backing Kamala Harris because they don't want to seem like they're the anointers in chief? Or do they really like the idea of an open convention? Here's what I think, right? Not that anybody's asked me, but here's what I think after following and covering politics for the better part of the last four decades. If this were a chess match, an open convention is really the only way, the only move that the Democrats have left on the board. Think about it. It would get them tons of eyeballs. Most Americans, especially young ones, they don't give a crap about conventions or politics, and they're not going to watch it. But if the convention looks more like a reality television show, where there's a spectrum of really not knowing who the winner is going to be, like in most conventions today, that could sell to younger people. That could sell to perhaps a younger audience, younger voters. I mean, it's common sense. Imagine the likes of Gavin Newsom, Gretchen Whitmer, both with Hollywood looks, by the way, facing off against Kamala Harris. Throw in Michelle Obama. Throw in George Clooney, as some have spoken. And because every show needs a villain, throw in Hillary Clinton. What you have is a guaranteed attention grabber, not to mention a much more democratic process, which, by the way, is more important than anything else. Because just telling someone who hasn't ever been liked by voters that they get to be the next president, like we did in Biden, and now what they're apparently going to do with Kamala Harris, that's not democratic. That's not democracy. But yet the Democrats have been getting away with that for the past 10 years. Now, will the Democrats do that? Probably not. You see, Democrats used to be the party of new ideas, fewer wars, and taking power from the establishment and giving it to the people. But now they're the establishment party. It's old, it's gray, it's unwavering. They've relinquished new ideas to Republicans. And here's the proof. When was the last time you heard a Democrat on a presidential ticket say something as honest and anti-establishment as what I'm about to show you? Listen.
Now, in 2003, I was a high school senior, and I had a political position back then. I believed the propaganda of the George W. Bush administration that we needed to invade Iraq, that it was a war for freedom and democracy, that those who were appeasing Saddam Hussein were inviting a broader regional conflict. Does that sound familiar to anything that we're hearing today? It's the same exact talking points 20 years later with different names. But have we learned anything over the last 20 years? No, I don't think that we have. We have learned that if we beat our chest instead of engage in diplomacy, that it will somehow produce good outcomes. That is not true. We learned that if we talk incessantly about World War II, we can bully people and cause them to ignore their basic moral impulses and lead the country straight into catastrophic conflict.
That's courageous. That's telling it like it is. That's criticizing your own party. That's criticizing a foreign policy. He's referring to both Ukraine and Gaza. Can you imagine, Manila, somebody on the Democratic ticket saying something like that? I can't.
Well, not these days, Rick. And the GOP of yesteryear, I would say, has been totally sunsetted. The Dems can no longer claim that the GOP is this party of old white Christian men, thanks to J.D. Vance and his own mixed race family. Mm-hmm. Remember, the country just met Usha Vance last week at the RNC, and she did not disappoint. You had political newcomers like Vivek Ramaswamy, new members of Congress like Byron Donalds and others who came from varying ethnic backgrounds. These are all the new faces of the Republican Party. So the Dems no longer corner the market in diversity in this election cycle. And with those fresh faces, Rick, and a new multicultural, you know, consortium of people, you're bound to get fresh ideas. Democrats, on the other hand, keep filling their ranks with these visually diverse faces, but the ideas are stale and they have become establishment policy. And if we look at younger voters in the recent elections across Europe, we'll see that it was the young vote, the youth vote, that has actually given legs to the more conservative side of those parties across the Atlantic. So I think that's where we need to look here in the U.S. as well, because it is no longer taboo to be young, to be non-white, and to be conservative.
Yeah, and I'll add to that perhaps the most important part that you may not have mentioned, to be anti-war, to literally come out and say, stop going around the world telling other countries what to do, what to say, while threatening them with bombs and then actually firing off the damn bombs, which we've been doing again and again and again. And who's been most responsible? Not that the Republicans have been innocent when it comes to this, but who's been most responsible for all of these wars? I'm talking Syria, I'm talking Libya, I'm talking Afghanistan, I'm talking Iraq, and now I'm talking Ukraine, and now I'm also talking about what's going on in Gaza. Democrats, not Republicans. Anyway, when we come back, we are, I sounded like Biden there. Anyway, when we come back, we continue discussing the wild landscape of U.S. politics. Right now, this is the place to do it while the race continues. Ted Rall, he's an author, a political cartoonist, and history buff. He has his finger on the pulse of the American politic, and he's going to join us in just a little bit. There he is, by the way, with a brand new haircut to show you all. We'll be right back. Hey, welcome back. I'm Rick Sanchez. Joining us now is Ted Rall. He's a cartoonist, he's a commentator, and a man with, as he mentioned, as we were talking before the show, a fresh haircut. So, Ted, your weekend, when you learned this news, what was your reaction? Interested in knowing?
Very much like 9/11, shocked but not surprised. It's like I knew this was coming, felt it was coming. There had been some reporting saying that, indicating that it might happen over the weekend. It's certainly, you know, like you, Rick, I have some experience with pattern recognition after years of looking at this sort of thing. And I just thought, you can just sort of tell from the messaging that was coming out from the high profile Democrats and the gaggle of media people who were all on the same page that this was coming down the pike. Very clearly, it had already been planned out for this weekend. I don't believe for one minute that 57 DNC chairs decided in a matter of 2 hours to support Kamala Harris, that she had time to make all those phone calls. But if she did, I'm voting for her because she's amazing. So, you know, it's absolutely a, you know, so, yeah, I was, look, it's an important moment. The Biden presidency was kind of like a boil that needed to be lanced because there had been so much fakery going on for so long, insulting the intelligence of the media and the voters, more importantly. You know, these lame excuses for that debate performance. You know, I had jet lag. I had a cold. You know, I mean, I stutter. Really? Like, it's like they've been lying to us for a long time.
Well,
it needed to stop.
And they're paying for it because look at the polls. I mean, they're getting trounced right now. And by the way, just so people know this, and a lot of people probably don't know this, and especially people watching us internationally, generally speaking in the United States, if a Democrat is going into a presidential election with a 2-point lead, that means he's probably going to be tied or lose. Democrats usually have to have at least a 3 or 4-point lead to be able to win these elections. So this is not a good picture right now. The fact that she, Kamala Harris, that is, even in the polls now, which, by the way, those polls I just showed you, those were taken before the assassination attempt on President Trump, which has only made him more popular, not to mention the convention. So as I see it, Ted, good luck. I don't know what they could possibly do to overcome this situation, but it ain't pretty, and they don't have a lot of time.
No, I mean, I don't think it's impossible, but I don't think it's likely that she's going to prevail here. You know, I mean, we haven't found her ceiling yet, unlike Biden, who never went above 42% approval rating.
Yeah.
You know, she might, who knows, she might outperform. But from everything we saw before, when she only polled 0.6% in the Democratic primaries, based on what we know in terms of her organizational skills, all the staffers who quit her campaign, who quit her vice presidential staff, you know, things would have to change pretty dramatically. She would have had to have learned a lot. And if anything, I think she has a really tough, like Mount Everest-like climb to get there to beat Trump. It could happen, but I wouldn't put money on it.
Aren't you bothered by the fact that this Democratic apparatchik has literally stolen from the American people and the voters their right to choose who their president and who their leader will be? Because we're going into a real deep generational divide here now. I mean, they did it with Biden, obviously, and now we're getting the person that Biden chose who also wasn't chosen by the people. So how long can this continue, and at what point do the people in the United States say, hey, enough of this, we should be able to choose, and stop going around the world telling everybody that they need to be like democracy like we are when we're not being a democracy?
Yeah, the only thing democratic about the Democratic Party is the name. In terms of the way they handle their primary processes, you can just ask John Edwards in 2008 or Howard Dean in 2004, Bernie Sanders not once but twice, Jesse Jackson back in 1988. They shiv you, Ted Kennedy in 1980. They shiv you if you're not, you know, going along with their way. They put their. Yeah, I mean, we had an opportunity here to have a robust primary over the last few months.
Yes,
they chose not to. They kicked RFK Jr. out. They drove Marianne Williamson out. That they let Dr. Cornel West know that he wasn't welcome, and so there was no primary process. The Democratic Party would not have be in the mess that they're in right now with Biden and Harris if they'd had a competitive actual primary process in the first place. Now, with 3 weeks to go, how are they going to do it?
Yeah. What do you think of my idea? I mean, I think they could still salvage something if they turn the convention into something that matters, where they could get enough eyeballs to get some kind of momentum for someone. But if they just go in there and they get the same people with old faces reading old speeches with old ideology, and then they get Kamala Harris out there who just, pardon me for saying this, but my take on her is she's not that bright, at least hasn't shown me she is. Maybe she is, but maybe she's not good on camera, or maybe her handlers aren't giving her good material. But if that's all they do, that will really get trounced, don't you think?
I do think so, and I think they're going to they might double down with making it an identity politics campaign, which would also be a mistake. This is going to be a policy campaign. It's going to be a populist campaign. Right now, Trump's way ahead on both of those metrics. So I like your idea, but I think logistically the problem is that they've already, you know, like the Sopranos, lined up all the Democrats to endorse Harris. I mean, all of them, all the likely competitors like Whitmer and Newsom and so on. So who's going to run against her? Marianne Williamson? And even she hasn't completely declared to do it. The problem is, I think it's too late for that. The closest they can get to anything that seems open is to have an open convention, make it like 1968.
Yeah.
Let the delegates be uncommitted. Let them, you know, hash it out like in the old days. That would provide some drama.
And if you want to pull for Harris and do everything possible to help her, you know, look good in that stage, that's fine because she is the VP. But aside from that, let it at least look or appear like the people there are deciding. And then you'll maybe get a little bit of credibility back. I mean, all the credibility that you've lost with what you've done in Ukraine and what you've done in Gaza, et cetera, et cetera. By the way, I mentioned that toward the end of my intro there. You know, I showed this guy Vance, and I got to tell you, he impresses me with what he dares to say about our foreign policy. Very few politicians have the courage to say that kind of stuff that he just did there. And certainly very, very few in the Democratic Party that have anything to do with the top apparatchiks, right?
No, I mean, even Bernie Sanders has been very weak on the Hamas, on the Israel-Hamas conflict in Gaza that may have killed 200,000 people, according to The Lancet. The Vance excerpt that you played reminded me of a guy named Donald Trump in 2016. I mean, it amazed me in a Republican primary coming up just 8 years after George W. Bush was president, he came out against the Iraq war and won and prevailed, which showed that really the Republican Party had a huge appetite for America first, sort of like Pat Buchananism back in the old days. It still does. And let's not also forget that it was Trump who negotiated with the Taliban after 20 years of this war that we were never going to win and arranged for the withdrawal. Biden didn't do a good job, to say the least, with the execution. But the idea that we needed to be out of there, I've been to Afghanistan a bunch of times. That was definitely the right move.
Yeah, and it's seeming like it's almost the same thing repeating itself. He's right with Ukraine. Most Americans are scratching their heads and trying to figure out, what the hell are we doing there? And why are we there? And then if a couple of them are lucky enough to go on YouTube and, you know, watch Ukraine Burning or watch this show or watch a couple of other things in alternative media and they find out what we did there in 2014, et cetera, then they start to go, oh, wait a minute. Why was I told these guys were the bad guys when maybe it ain't quite so? So, I mean, that's the process that we're starting to find out. And we're finding it out from people like Vance, who are in the Republican Party, not the Democratic Party.
You know, I think I'd really love to hear your thoughts on this, Rick. I feel like we're in the middle of a dramatic political realignment, like the one in the late 20s and early 30s that sort of flipped the script between the Democrats and the Republicans. That's the Democrats used to be, as you said, far more skeptical of foreign adventurism.
Yep.
Now they're the war party. Republicans are not exactly pacifists,
no,
but they're nothing like the Democrats.
Yeah, that, at least that's a situation right now. Final question. Let's talk VP. Do you think they'll bring somebody out who's new and fresh-faced and someone we've never heard of? Or do you think they'll go with the same old, same old?
This is going to be a Tim Kaine in 2016 type choice. It's going to be a boring white guy, probably a governor, maybe Bashir from Kentucky. Maybe if they're really wild and crazy, they'll go for Josh Shapiro from Pennsylvania. It could be Roy Cooper from North Carolina. Huh. It'll be someone like that. It can't be someone who shows her up or has any charisma whatsoever.
So that means it can't be Gavin Newsom.
It can't be Gavin Newsom. There's no way.
Because he looks too good compared to her.
Yeah,
The guy's glib. The guy knows how to talk. I mean, that's the one thing that he does very well.
He looks great on TV.
Weird that they're not, like, all putting, well, whatever. Look, they make their decisions, and they're going to lie. And they make their bed, and they will lie in it then, I suppose. Ted, you're a delight to talk to. Thanks so much for taking time to talk to us. I understand you do have a new book out, right?
I do. 2024 Revisited. It's my new old book. It's predicting the future 24 years ago about what it would look like now.
It's great to talk to you once again, my friend. Thanks again. We'll be looking forward to seeing you very soon.
Thanks, Rick.
And that's our show. Remember to always look outside your own box. Truths, as we like to say, don't live in boxes. I'm Rick Sanchez, and we'll see you next time.